Production funding for Behind the Headlines is made possible in part by the WKNO Production Fund, the WKNO Endowment Fund, and by viewers like you. Thank you.
Memphis Mayor Jim Strickland, tonight on Behind the Headlines. I'm Eric Barnes, president and executive editor of the Daily Memphian. Thanks for joining us. I am joined tonight by Mayor Jim Strickland. Thanks for being here again.
Thanks for having me.
Along with Bill Drees, reporter with the Daily Memphian. I have as many questions as I've ever had for you, actually, as I was prepping for this. And we've had you on many times, and thank you again for coming. I want to start with a question I asked some of the city council. We did a show on the budget, the city budget recently. You put your budget forward. Your finance director, CFO, was here, and a couple of people from the council. And I asked them a question: what's not in the budget and it's not going to make it in the budget that you wish were in there, that you just, when you face the financial realities and so on, what's some of the highest priority things that you just were left on the table?
Oh, I mean, it'd be just a lot more of what we've got. I would love to give every police officer and firefighter 10% raise. I would love to have 5,000, 10,000 summer jobs for young people. I'd love to be able to replace the playground equipment at so many different parks and community centers. I'd love to be able to put more into our Affordable Housing Trust Fund and our Community Catalyst Fund. So I think we've hit all the priority areas. I don't think we've left out any priority areas. I would just put more money into those
areas. And what stands in the way of that? I mean, what makes that not possible?
Our budget is just static. I've talked a lot on this show and other places about our loss of population over the decades. And because we're not growing in population, our tax base is not growing, and our budget roughly increases by $10 million a year. We have a little more this year because we've saved on some expenses that may come up today. But it's just not a big growth. I mean, that's 1-2% a year. That's not big growth, as opposed to somewhere like Nashville, which is growing by 100 people a day or a week, whatever it is, and their increase in their revenue is dramatic. That's why I say population loss is our number one challenge, because that is so key to have more money to fight poverty and improve literacy and all those.
One of those things that your administration has touted in terms of reshaping Memphis and growing, I think the phrase you all use often is growing up, not out, right? You know, and all that is wrapped around Memphis 3.0, the strategic plan, you know, transportation and growth areas and so on. And it seems to have hit some problems at council. Are you worried about that Memphis 3.0 is not going to pass?
No, I'm not worried about that. I think the votes are there. Personally, I wish they would go ahead and do it, but that's their business. They have internal, but we have a majority of the council who does support it, and the majority of the population that does.
And the hang up in part is in New Chicago, there's some activists there who are frustrated, feel like they weren't part of the process. There are a lot of questions about.
Well, that's what they say.
That's what they say, and so that's where I'm going. And there are a lot of question marks, and Bill has written about it, and other people have written about it, about some of the people raising these questions, and questions about things, that legal issues that they've had. Do you feel like that process, you reached out to all the communities in Memphis?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. There's never been an effort like this. 15,000 Memphians took part. 2 months ago, I was in Fraser talking, or North Memphis, talking to a group, and the lady who's kind of leading this effort, she was there. And our point of disagreement was she wanted the city to give her the property at Firestone. Just give it to her to redevelop. And I said, no, I respectfully disagree. What we're trying to do is gather up all the old Firestone property to then entice a manufacturer to come in there and provide hundreds of good paying jobs. The vast majority of the crowd agreed with my version and disagreed with hers. So I'll stand on that argument all the time. You can never get unanimous consent on anything. I mean, I could say happy mother, you know, mother, Sunday's gonna be Mother's Day. Not everyone is going to agree with that.
We'll go to Bill.
Let's stick with Firestone for a bit here, because the last time I looked at the property that the plant was on for many decades is owned by an amateur golf association where there was a driving range for a brief time, and there are delinquent taxes. Is the city still looking at what might happen at a tax sale on that property?
Absolutely. They have not paid their taxes. They need to pay their taxes. And because they haven't paid their taxes, we need to get that property back.
So is there a date by which that's supposed to happen? Because there's a redemption period and everything like that?
Yeah, it got delayed in a tax sale, I think, that was set earlier this year. I'm hoping at the next tax sale it actually goes forward, because you're exactly right. Under state law, you have a year to redeem the property by paying the taxes and penalties and getting the property back. But my guess is they haven't paid the property taxes in years. They're not going to have that money to redeem the property. So we just need to get that process moving.
And we've talked about this in the past. There's a scenario where the city might own it. There's also a scenario where you might, in effect, broker someone else buying it.
Yeah, we just need to, if we can get it through tax sale, at least then we have some voice in how quickly we can get that property redeveloped and back marketed. We're not looking to own it and do any development ourselves. We just want some private development. And we've been working on a brownfield agreement. Obviously, Firestone was a great employer for all those years, but they left behind residue of their manufacturing process, which caused some environmental issues. So it takes a brownfield agreement with the state to get that property available for a new development, mm-hmm. and we've been working on that too.
Going back to the pay raises for a second, there is some sentiment on the council to at least bring the 3% raise you proposed for public safety and the 1% raise you proposed for everyone else to kind of get those closer together. What would be your reaction to that sentiment to maybe bring up the 1%?
Budgeting is about choices, and it's easy to find places where you want to spend money. I mean, I listed it when we first started here. I'd love to spend more money, but you have to make choices. And the hard part of budgeting is where you're not going to fund, or if you want to raise from 1% to 3, what are you going to cut in the budget that we proposed? The budget is very lean. It's focused on core basic services and better serving our public. So when the council cuts something, it's going to be real. It's going to have real consequences.
You went into the fund balance, the reserve, I think, was it $19 million?
For the solid waste?
Yeah.
I thought it was $15
million. Okay. So is there some anticipation that you want the budget to make some kind of payment back to replenish the fund?
Not in this budget. We just didn't have room to do that. I think that's something we got to keep on our radar as we move forward, but we didn't have the money to do that. You know, I really wanted to prioritize, obviously, public safety. I've talked about that a lot. Many of our ranks in the police department and fire department, to a lesser degree, are below market value. We've worked really hard at hiring more police officers and firefighters, and we have to give them as much of a raise as we possibly could afford. I thought it was 3%. And that's on our operating budget. That was our number one focus.
What is the total number of police right now? Because you ran on replenishing the ranks, getting back to something like 2,400 or 2,500.
Right. Yeah, remember 9-10 years ago, we had over 2,400 officers. Shortly after I got elected, we dropped down to close to 1,900. We're now over 2,000. We're going to hopefully hit 2,100 this year. Our goal is to be at 2,300 by the end of 2020. It's hard work. Every city out there is recruiting officers. So we have that competition. The low unemployment rate, while we are really happy about that, actually hurts in that regard because there's so many other opportunities. But we've had tremendous success.
I assume it's not just bodies. It's also strategies. I mean, it's how those bodies are deployed. So, you know, back in the day, people remember Blue Crush, and there are now this explosion of sky, what are they called, sky cops, or the cameras that people see around. Sometimes they're in freestanding, sometimes they're on a light post and so on. What community policing, which is something people talk about, in conjunction with the hiring, what is that, what are the changes or not changes in terms of strategies in policing and fighting crime?
Well, let me start on the budget, and then we'll go to the other things. The more, when we get hopefully next year when we start getting over 2,100 officers, our overtime budget can start going down. Our overtime budget is roughly $25 million. Back when we had 2,400 officers, it was $12, $13 million. We're having to use so much overtime just to make daily complements. So hopefully that can go down as we all hire more police officers. We have also mentioned we have 100 PSTs, which we did not have 3
years
ago.
Describe what those are for people.
It's sort of a junior police officer where they're wearing the khaki and they handle accidents and
they're in the white cars. If people have seen them at an intersection, maybe
They're a force multiplier. Basically, they can relieve police officers from handling traffic issues, accidents, so that they can do things that only commissioned officers do. But we need more police officers to do more community policing. I am committed to Blue Crush and to community policing, but both need manpower to be able to do that. You need more officers so that officers can take time out and spend an hour during their day getting to know more of the neighbors. We still do it, and we still do Blue Crush, but we're not operating at full speed because of the lack of manpower.
Let me switch to another thing that you've talked about a lot when you campaign, and you've talked a lot at this table and elsewhere, which is paving and potholes. And I remember you saying, you know, people who criticize you for making such a big deal of potholes, I'll paraphrase you, they've never been to a community meeting. They've never met with a group of residents, because that's one of the number one things you hear. So where does that stand? Because some parts, you know, I mean, just driving in this morning, you know, I mean, I was driving in on the highway, and that's, I believe, a state responsibility. Right. But I would imagine most people don't think of that. They just think it's their highway in Memphis, and they look at you and want those potholes done. Yeah. Same with Poplar, and some of the major corridors are in pretty bad shape. Other areas aren't, to
Amen.
Be fair.
No, but we have too many streets, whether they're state route or city streets, that are in bad shape. So I joke with people. I say, we have literally doubled the paving budget. At the end of this fiscal year, June 30th, we will have paved 90% more roads in my first 3 years than the 3 years prior. But people don't feel it. And the reason they don't feel it is because we have a huge backlog for two reasons. Number one, our city's 340 square miles. We're one of the largest 10 cities geographically in the nation, excluding consolidated governments, because those are really countywide. We have 6,800 lane miles. That means you can go back and forth between Los Angeles almost four times. So we're large and have a lot of lane miles. And for at least a decade before I was mayor, it was underfunded. There was 1 year, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, that the paving budget was $5 million. It's now 19.5. So we have a huge backlog. And I tell people we have doubled the paving budget, but you're not gonna feel it for several more years. I say to people, 4 years from now or so, people are going to start feeling it and go, you know, Strickland was telling me the truth 4 years ago when he said they doubled the paving budget.
Don't y'all talk about a cycle? So is it a 25-year cycle that you would every for, street would be repaved?
For residential streets, we're back to a 25-year cycle, which is in the ballpark of the national standard. But for streets that handle more traffic, we're on about a 15-year cycle.
15. Okay, Bill.
And are you satisfied with state government's upkeep of the roads these have been state highways and includes Poplar Avenue and roads that you might not think are state highways? Are you satisfied with their upkeep?
No. I'm also not satisfied with where we are either. So I'm not throwing them under the bus, and I'm not willing to throw ourselves under the bus. Mm-hmm. We've worked really hard to improve how we pave streets, how often we pave streets, and how we cut our grass. And I've told the state I wish they would do better at cutting their grass, which they own, and their streets. As you know, it's all the interstates and most major streets in Memphis, Elvis Presley Boulevard, Lamar, Union, Poplar, those are Germantown Parkway, which they did pave last year. I wish they'd do better. I do know from being mayor for 3 years, most every mayor in the state is saying the same thing to them. And we're working with them to try to ramp up their service level to the public.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the state, since the last time that we talked here, you got some really good news from the state about the Tom Lee Park improvements. And we'll talk more about mediation in a second. But how did this $10 million that Governor Lee put in the budget come about?
I give most of the credit to Carol Coletta.
The head of the River Parks
Partnership.
Yes.
And, you know, last fall, she said, we're going to make a $10 million ask for the park. And I told her we'd support her. I honestly didn't think it would happen because in my recent memory, cities haven't gotten big grants because of the budget. And I think her desire and our team effort coincided with a surplus that the state had, and that was a match made in heaven. So we worked it very hard because one thing I'm proud about with regard to Tom Lee Park and the redo is we're not using any money that would go to core services like paving and police and fire. This is all, I guess, special money or for lack of a better word, that wouldn't go to those core services, and using that state surplus is one of those examples. And it was a team effort. Our state legislators deserve a huge credit from Shelby County. The Mississippi River Partnership with Carol and the City of Memphis all worked together.
So there was this moment when the legislature, some of the legislators decided maybe they would take some of that money for some improvements to GPAC in Germantown, the Performing Arts Center there. Was that just some legislators messing with you? Just kind of saying, hello, we're over here?
I don't think so. I think, there are more worthy causes out there than there's enough money. And the Germantown project, from what all I hear, is a worthy project. So I didn't get upset that somebody wanted to fund that because it's a worthy project. So I didn't get that as a negative thing. I just think a good competition for dollars. It worked out. I appreciate Senator Kelsey's leadership because none of that would have worked out without that. And he's been good partner to work for the city, and he represents Germantown too. So mm-hmm. He's just doing his job.
There is this mediation going on between Memphis River Parks Partnership and the Memphis in May Festival. And there's also a gag order on what the parties can talk about on that. Do you think we're going to have some kind of meeting of the minds and agreement soon?
Well, I don't know how soon, and I do know that they've made progress, but if they don't agree to it, then I'll just make the decision and we'll move on. Kind of like the Greensward issue. It is possible to have a great park 12 months a year and have a better park, not only a status quo for Memphis in May, but a better park for Memphis in May. I joked yesterday that, Jimmy Carter was able to bring Egypt and Israel together. We landed a man on the moon, St. Jude's curing cancer every single day. Surely we can make Tom Lee Park better 12 months a year.
Do the two sides still disagree on whether the new plan will mean more or less space for the festival?
I don't know.
You mentioned the Greensward, and with disclosure that I'm the former president, or what was it, chairman of the board or president of the board of the Overton Park Conservancy. What is the status on construction and yeah. the agreement?
The work is either started or will start shortly, and they're starting at the Prentice Place lot.
Over on McLean.
Correct. So that's the first place where the work, and it's either started or about to start. I actually met with the new president of the zoo yesterday, and I'm really optimistic about his leadership over there. I think he's going to be fantastic.
And is it to be finished this summer, or is it a multi-year?
Because it's multi-year because
of their demand, peak demand during the
right.
summer,
and yeah. so we can't shut down visitation to the zoo, so it's going to take longer than just normal.
There was news some weeks ago, and full credit to the Memphis Business Journal, that there was discrepancies in the city's numbers, that your office's numbers, yeah. on minority contracting, and I think that came up again. What happened with
sure.
those numbers, and what are the numbers in terms of participation
sure.
and contracting with minority owned firms?
First, there was one mistake, and that mistake was us saying that the last year's MWBE number was 24%. It's actually 20%. So I'm very proud that the year before I was mayor, it was 12%. We've moved it to 20%. That's a significant improvement, and we're committed to do even more. But it just wasn't 24% like we thought. You know, we pride ourselves on improving service and being very transparent and measuring things in numbers. It does have a downside because sometimes mistakes happen. But name me any other government at any level who measures things like we do and is as transparent as we are. There's none. You couldn't name one.
As a manager, I mean, part of what you do as mayor is you're a manager. You manage this big organization, this big. How do you respond to that? I mean, do you bang your head on the table? Do you yell and scream? When there's an error like that? Because it is also a political number that you tout you can be proud of and so on. Did someone get fired? Did someone get demoted? How do you respond to that? I don't know that you'll tell me honestly, but how do you
human
respond?
Human beings make mistakes. I've even been known to make a mistake. I know it's hard to believe, but I think I've made a mistake here or there. And it was a mathematical mistake.
We at the Daily Memphian have never made a mistake. You have never texted
me. I never have texted you
about that we have made a mistake. Never. So there we go.
And so human beings make mistakes. We're so clear about this mistake because the document that the Business Journal looked at showed the mistake on its face, so there was no cover-up involved.
Right.
It was just a
mathematical. But there's a lot of mistrust about that, in all seriousness, right? I mean, because there is this feeling, and the numbers play out in a city that's 50-60% African American, and only 12% of the contracting was going to African American or women-owned firms. There is, I mean, almost an understandable sense of conspiracy about that, right? I mean, why is this constantly stacked against us?
And it's not a lot of mistrust. I think we've built a lot of extraordinary trust. In fact, I think that's why you haven't heard more negative pushback, because people believe in what we've done, in Joanne Massey's leadership, that we have really made this a community issue. Compare what's been talked about the last 3 years to the 15 years prior to that. We've made it an issue, we've shown some success, and we admit our mistake.
Yeah. Bill, with 3 minutes left.
Do you think that the city's example of minority contracting is reaching over and influencing private sector spending with minority companies?
Yes and no. I think it is starting to be talked about in the private sector. I haven't seen hard evidence that we've made progress. Now, I'm not saying it's not out there, I just haven't seen it. We'll actually see it the next census, because the census actually measures that. And that's how, you know, what I think is famous, maybe it's not so famous, when Fred Davis, who I think is the grandfather of this issue, he talked about how the census showed that 1% of all business transacted in Memphis, not just with city government, just everywhere, was with African Americans 25 years ago, and the same thing just a few years ago. So we'll see the next census if we've made progress.
And the potential spend in the private business sector is much larger than the government.
I mean, just for instance, even before I took office, it was 12% in city government. It was still only 1% overall. So government alone cannot move the needle on that. So that's why it's important you got to give FedEx a lot of credit, and CBU, our 800 initiative, which is really going in depth and trying to increase the revenues and the employees from 800 small African-American owned businesses. So there is movement in that regard, but it's probably going to take a while to get true, real results.
The city budget is, we were talking about earlier, $700 million, give or take, and the capital budget, $75 to $80 million. So, you know, a big number, right, but small compared to the overall city. Hospitality Hub,
yes.
Your administration, I think, has been supportive of this move from a small space down at Jefferson and Second to a bigger, the old auto inspection station,
right,
if people remember, just off Danny Thomas. Is that all going to come together? It's a combination of private, public money and the donation or a cheap lease on that space, and then philanthropic money.
Yes.
Is it going to happen, you think?
I think it will. Council, I think, approved it yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think the county commission has enough support, it will. And what it is a day facility to help homeless people take a bath and go to the restroom and sort of relax in nice, safe surroundings. And also, as an emergency shelter for women, because we need more beds for women on an emergency basis. And on top of that, it will also act as our cooling and heating center in extreme weather conditions throughout the year. thankfully, our private sector stepped up and donated a lot of money.
Will this be part of a change? I mean, there are a lot of different cities have different strategies, and it's a very complicated issue, but panhandling strategies, you know, as Memphis is building all these hotels and expanding a convention center, a lot of people don't like running into homeless people, being asked for money, kind of hanging out in the parks. Other people say, look, I mean, they're here and they have that right. Where do you stand on that? Do you hope this moves people out of the core of downtown?
Well, I hope it moves people out of homelessness into a productive life. We will not tolerate aggressive panhandling, and we will go after that aggressively. But what I hope is we've reduced homelessness, and this predates me as mayor. 7-8 years ago, a plan was put, Mayor Wharton was involved, the Alliance for the Homeless. We've reduced homelessness by about 42% roughly in Memphis, and that's very contrary to what's happening around the nation. So I give a lot of credit to the Alliance, and we've got a plan, and we're executing that plan.
All right, we are out of time. Thank you for being here. We'll have you here again. Thank you, Bill, and thank you all for joining us. Join us again next week.